the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today's NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And this is the middle of our yearly opponent preview series. And the hope is over 14 days that I will have 14 shows. And I'm not going to number the episodes. I'm going to try and put them out in the order of the season that the Cardinals play them. But this edition of the show is about the Washington Commanders, a team the Cardinals opened the season against last year. So we have a familiar guest, Brian Manning from Commanders Wire, who was with us a year ago. The Cardinals will host the Washington Commanders in week four. Neither team, one, if you recall, Brian, that week one, terrible game, ended up with a win for you guys, and then we went on to have terrible season. So here we are again, right?
Yeah, I agree. I remember last year, I don't know that we were thinking it was going to be a great game, but I don't think anyone predicted. I mean, I was thinking in that week one game, they were just both trying to get their, everybody has a stinker early in the season. Man, that was a preview of things to come from the Washington perspective. Man, it was a horrible year. I think this year's game is going to be a little more exciting for both of us.
Yeah, I hope so. They finished 4-13, last place in the NFC East. They ended up losing their final eight games, so they were 4-5 at one point, and then the wheels fell off. The Sam Howell experience didn't end up being a very good experience as he ended up with 21 interceptions and was sacked 65 times. I believe he led the NFL in both categories and the most interceptions and being sacked the most times. Take us back over the last season, because obviously when you talked to me last year, y'all expected sort of the same thing that Ron Rivera's teams always were, that they were middling teams that would hover around 500 and be kind of in the mix at the end. But what happened?
Yeah, the first half of the season through outside of that week one game where they found a way to win, but it was not pretty. But outside of that, up until about week nine, I think it was the first Giants game. Week eight, week nine, I'm not sure. But anyway, they were pretty good. I mean, offensively, Bieniemy was a problem last year. The offensive coordinator, he was. I don't want to ever hear him being a head coach contender again. But the whole team was poorly coached, offensive, defensive. I mean, Del Rio was a mess. Sam Howell was excellent considering what he had around him, and he fell apart in the second half. He had no support. Washington was dead last in rushing attempts, first in passing attempts, and. And this is when they were in a lot of games, as you noted the record in the first half of the season. They were a competitive team until the late in the season, and they were blown out. So it was everything just like Howell's problem was earlier. He took too many sacks earlier in the year, but he was making plays. When I think they tried to cut back on the sacks, he was making more mistakes, with the reads and everything. And then he completely, by week 12, week 13, he completely lost confidence. And it just snowballed. It was horrible. And once Jacoby Brissett came in and moved the offense efficiently, that was. And then they put Howell back in. It was over. I mean, it was just horrible management. I mean, just the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, head coach. It was such a mess last year. And it's that's when over the years of watching Washington, covering Washington, I've seen a lot of bad coaching there, but that was the worst year that I've ever seen from a coaching perspective. We've seen three win teams, but that team last year was the worst, and it's sad because there was talent on the team.
Right. Well, and going into last year, you figured that it would be a very physical defensive team, and then after after the Cardinals, and the Cardinals were terrible in part because Josh Dobbs had been with the team like a week and started at quarterback. He wasn't very good. But then they give up 33, 37, 34, and 40 points in the next 4 weeks. And that kind of set the tone for the defense the rest of the year. Now, they had a few games that were better, but for the most part, the defense, which was supposed to be the strength of this team, they were the worst team defensively. The Cardinals had a terrible defense, and Washington's was even worse. They were dead last in yards allowed. They allowed the most yards in the league, and they allowed the most points in the league, which is ultimately why they ended up, you know. And on top of that, then their two talented pass rushers. Well, Chase Young obviously had disappointed. He gets traded to San Francisco. Montez Sweat, they bail on him and trade him to the Bears, and then you're left with a really bare cupboard when it comes to the defense. What was the most disappointing part for you?
The defense as a whole was the most disappointing part. You look at, I could say coaching, but that's obvious. But as far as the entire product, it was definitely the defense, because going in, I didn't see, I had hopes for Sam Howell, but I didn't see anything more than the ceiling was a top 12, 14 offense. That was the ceiling. It was obviously worse than that, but defensively, it had a top five ceiling going into the year. They were a top five defense going into last year, and they added a first round pick at cornerback. They added a second round pick, you know, who could play corner and safety. They still didn't do anything at linebacker. It was amazing. They had a defensive coordinator and a head coach who played linebacker for a decade each in the NFL, and they couldn't find a linebacker through 4 years. That's beyond me, but that was horrible. And it was just every player on the team last year took a step back. I mean, you talk about Pro Bowl players like John Allen and Daron Payne, y'all took steps back. And then the only guy who I think ascended last year was Sam Cosmi, who plays right guard now. He was a second-round pick at offensive tackle in 2021. He's the only guy whose career took off. Like guys like Jahan Dotson, who were expecting a big jump last year, he disappointed. And I don't blame any of the players. I mean, because when you have that many players not play to their potential, there's a bigger issue. And we all saw that. And the players, the offensive players, even the veterans who are good guys, like Logan Thomas, Terry McLaurin, all those guys, Cosmi, they hated Eric Bieniemy. I mean, you know, they didn't come out and say we hate him, but when on locker clean-out day, it was clear how everyone felt about it. Everybody felt sorry for Sam Howell because they knew he was giving it everything he had, and he didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, well, which is interesting because Bieniemy, people always wondered why Bieniemy never got head coaching jobs. I mean, look at what, like, from there were, I mean, I've heard things about him being hard to, like, as a coordinator, I guess working under Andy Reid was able to soften him a little bit. But, I mean, you've already got Ron Rivera that there. Maybe Bieniemy was trying to do too much on his own. I don't know. But was there anything, I mean, Terry McLaurin hit 1,000 yards last year. That's still, you know, he hit that milestone. But was there anything that you could take away from that year that was a positive from anyone? You mentioned Sam Cosmi, but anything else?
I think Brian Robinson was good. He took a step forward. It was the second year. He was healthy last year. His yards per carry went up last year, and he would have excellent starts to games, and they wouldn't use him. And he took a big step forward as a receiver as well. So I think Robinson moved forward. Cosmi, as I mentioned earlier. Outside of that, I can't name one defensive player who I saw last year or who I was excited about going into this year. Like guys like Daron Payne, John Allen, they'll be fine. You're not worried about those guys. Like Jamin Day, like St. Juste he was a third year corner last year. He was promising in his second year 2 years ago. He was like the 6'3" kid out of Minnesota. You're thinking he's going to be really good. He was horrible last year. I think people people remember him so well because he celebrates every play. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But that's my favorite thing to see from cornerbacks when they do the incomplete, like they did something and it was an overthrow.
You know, and if I ever do a story on St. Juice, it's always of him celebrating. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, man.
But you know, you look at Forbes, who was the first round pick last year. I mean, absolutely, there were so many questions about him as a 16th overall pick anyway. But you know, I almost give a pass to the kid because the coaching was so bad. They had a guy coaching the secondary that was a high school coach just like 3 years before. I mean, the only reason he had a job is he coached Jack Del Rio's son or something like that in high school.
You gotta love it. Gotta love it. All right.
Good old boys club there.
All right. Let's move to the offseason. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Spencer of Cardinals talk a little bit. Let's move on. Continuing talking about the Washington Commanders. What did they do in the offseason? That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best Star of Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Brian Manning from Commander's Wire. Moving to the offseason, an eventful offseason as they started with a coaching change. Out Ron Rivera, out the coordinators, no Eric Bieniemy, no Jack Del Rio, and they hire Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, who has had success as a head coach before, was a fantastic defensive coordinator in Dallas. What have been the early returns? Obviously nothing on the field, but what is the vibe with Quinn so far as head coach?
Initially, I believe everyone was a little bit disappointed because there has been so many rumors. I'm sure you heard it too, where Ben Johnson was going to be the coach. And they were trying to say the whole time before the whole interview, he canceled the interview while they were in flight and all that. Before that, they were already saying, Pump the Jets. Dan Quinn's a legit contender for this job because the new GM, Adam Peters, who you probably know well from San Francisco, he was going to hire somebody who he could collaborate with, who he could work with, and he and Dan Quinn got along great. But Dan Quinn is – the worry I had with Dan Quinn was you're drafting a rookie quarterback. And you know, it's popular these days you want an offensive coach when you get a rookie quarterback because right. You want to keep them together for years. So – And I there was a little bit of that with me, but the way he hired his offensive staff was excellent. He has four quarterbacks that played either college or pro quarterback on his staff. And so, say, you know, you obviously Cliff Kingsbury
yes.
very well.
Yes,
we'll get to him later. you got him as coordinator. If something happened to where he took a job after 1 or 2 years, you could bump up to Vita Pritchard to coordinator. Then there's David Blau. There's Brian Johnson, who was the OC of the Eagles last year. He's like like an assistant head coach type of deal. I don't expect him to be there, you know, a long time. He'll be looking for it. But they layered the staff well. Jaden Daniels will have plenty of support. And Quinn, it's like everybody loves Dan Quinn. Like you see the respect he has around the league. Everybody wants to play for him. And I think that's kind of exciting, and then he fires you up. You hear the press conferences, and he fires you up by being a normal dude. I don't think there's anything about him that's just he doesn't seem phony, and I think everybody just relates to him because it's not a bunch of coach speak where I think fans were just so bored of Rivera. It's like it's just so sick of seeing Rivera up on the podium. But Quinn's just a nice change, and everybody's going to make these comparisons. Well, they hired another Ron Rivera. I don't agree with that. But he's got to prove it by winning. And they're not expected to win 12 games or anything this year. But you need to go back.
Well,
they need to win.
It's definitely starting over. So this is they're going through what the Cardinals went through last year. Only really what they're going through. They're actually going through what the Cardinals went through in 2019. And Cliff Kingsbury was the head coach, and they drafted Kyler Murray, which brings us to Cliff Kingsbury. How did you like the hiring? Because, you know, there are very mixed feelings about Kingsbury around the league at this point. I will say that as a head coach, he didn't do poorly. I didn't think he was a bad head coach. He did make adjustments from year to year. I think that there was basically one thing that held him back, and that is the fact that he would not hold players quite accountable. He would not call players out for mistakes, and so that would get tough. And I don't think he coached Kyler Murray hard enough. I think he was, in all those years of recruiting him and trying to get him on the team and admiring him, he just was happy to have him and was content with saying, hey, Kyler, go be you. But now, as just the offensive coordinator, he can do what he's not. I hope to see him get a head coaching job again sometime, because I do think that he is a good coach. Players like playing for him. Players view him as an offensive genius, but now he doesn't have to worry about the other stuff. He just has to worry about offensive production, putting people in the right scheme. And has there been much from Kingsbury thus far in the offseason in terms of talking into what they've got?
Well, anytime he's talked, it's been like a script. It's been like he's reading off a script. He's not given anything. It's been very vague. Where the defensive coordinator has been kind of like you want to run through a wall for the guy. But, you know, Kingsbury's been – he's followed the script. He's not said anything. I don't know that he's spoken, but maybe one time since Jaden Daniels was drafted. But before that, he was just sticking to the script. He did not like that somebody calling his offense the air raid. I'm not sure what that was about.
Well, yeah, but his offense is more than that. There are air raid principles, but he's you know, bristled at that since he came to the league. There are definite principles to the air raid, but it isn't just chuck and duck. He does have a complex. He has a good run scheme. He had good success with the run game here in Arizona. Couldn't use it enough. But there are some flaws to things. Like he won't run. They will run almost nothing under center. It'll almost all be out of shotgun. And so, but yeah, he takes offense to the notion that it's what he does is a college offense, because it is more than that.
And, you know, now the college offenses have taken over the NFL these days. So I can kind of understand where he's coming from, but everybody's at first, I'm not sure. Like I mentioned earlier, everybody was so believing Ben Johnson was going to be the guy that it was still like shock when he wasn't the guy and Quinn had to hire an offensive coordinator. And I think once Quinn hired Kingsbury, people were like, well, hey, he's not the head coach here. This could work out. And then, you know, I studied him more closely than I had before. And I look at all the work he'd done with different types of quarterbacks over the years. And he's really made a difference.
He is really good with quarterbacks. He really is. Like dating back to like he's had great success. He's good. He's good with quarterbacks. And yeah, I think Jaden, he will know how to get things out of Jaden Daniels. It'll be interesting to see him in an offensive role. He doesn't have to worry about the other part of things, which now brings us to free agency. And Washington cleaned house. They cleaned house on their roster. They have so many new players. Can kind of go down the list of, I'm just looking here on the free agent list, the players they signed. They get Dorrance Armstrong, previous pass rusher from from Dallas. They pick up two really quality linebackers in Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner on the back end of his career. But the Bobby Wagner move makes a ton of sense because of how much knowledge he has of Dan Quinn's defense from when he was in Seattle. Tyler Biadasz, the former, they got him, who is the starting center for the Cowboys. Nick Allegretti with the Chiefs. You pick up Austin Eckler for running back. Marcus Mariota is now the backup quarterback. Jeremy Chinn, safety from Carolina. Cleland Farrell, pass rusher out of San Francisco. They have a new cooking, Brandon McManus. Dante Fowler, Michael Davis at cornerback. The list goes on and on and on. Did they feel they needed to completely kind of purge themselves, kind of wash away all the stink of what was last season? Because this is exactly what the Cardinals did in 2018 and then kind of again last year. Well, kind of again last year is that with the bad that was on the roster, they tried to get rid of as many players as were part of that team.
I do think there's a lot of truth to that, and Quinn wanted to bring guys, and Peters both wanted to bring in guys they were familiar with, because they, and you know, they not only they were familiar with and knew the scheme, but guys who've been around winning teams. Right, let's bring some guys who've won in here and show these guys here how to win a little bit, how to, and you know, that's where the Bobby Wagner signing comes in, because Bobby Wagner, I think he can still play. Do I think he's the guy 5 years ago? No, but I think he can still play.
He's still one of the smartest players in the league. He's still a volume producer, but he is instead of being an absolute stud, he's a pretty good linebacker who has incredible instincts.
And what he brings off the field, I think the practice field, what he can rub off on the younger players, the attitude, everything he can teach those guys, and he's willing to do it, and he can still produce on the field. His signing is so much more valuable than just starting 17 games. There's a young rookie linebacker they drafted out of Temple who Wagner's already taken under his wing, and then like Luvu is that's the signing of the offseason.
Yeah,
that guy's
really good. He's really good.
I think he's going to be the guy that explodes as far as the guy who just takes a big jump. And the key for this team right now is everybody thinks edge rusher. Really, I think Quinn can manufacture enough from the front, from, you know, pass rush, because he's got those tackles, Allen and Payne, and you got Johnny Newton in the second round. But, you know, Dorrance Armstrong will get you 8 to 10 sacks. But I think Luvu is going to rush the passer quite a bit too. But the secondary – those young corners we talked about earlier, Forbes and St. Juice, Dan Quinn and defensive coordinator Joe Witt Jr. have a history of, you saw what they did in Dallas, taking those middle, late-round corners and turning them into interception leaders. I mean, they've got a great track record of getting the most out of those secondary players. Well, that's the key here. If they can turn around Forbes from last year and get St. Juice back on track, got a chance to do pretty good defense. I don't want to put a limit on where I think they're going to finish defensively, but I'm going to tell you, they're not going to be 32nd this year.
Is there any loss that you will miss?
I think number one is I really like Sam Howell. And I believe Sam Howell's going to – I think he can play in this league. I believe – I won't be shocked if he ever takes Geno Smith at some point this season. But I ain't going to say miss him. He needed a – Jaden Daniels is a superior prospect. Let's be honest.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think he can play in this league. And I think there's a lot of – just feeling sorry for him, Sam, because he went through a lot last year, and he never complained. He kept getting up, and you root for guys like that. Other than that, you know – I would say Montez Sweat, but he was traded before the season was over.
Right. Washington got rid of him.
And, you know, they never wanted to lose Sweat, but, you know, they already had a new owner, and they
got something for him.
They were looking at it as number 40 overall pick. It ended up being the Bears were terrible when they traded for Sweat at the time. It ended up being the 40 overall pick.
And then Sweat made their defense really good.
Yeah. You know, Sweat never – and. You know, what, 4-plus seasons in Washington, never reached 10 sacks in a season. Last year he did. He got like – I can't remember how many sacks he got in Washington before he was traded. But,
6.5. He led the team still with 6.5 sacks, and he got traded mid-season. Yeah.
And I wonder how much he was held back by those defensive coaches too, because I think they were just horrible. But, you know, Chase Young is – I think Washington fans, a couple of years ago they would have – it would have been a dagger through the heart if you could say Chase Young would never make it through his career contract. But I think people were just tired of the whole Chase Young experience before last year ever began. It was always something. He thought the biggest mistake he ever made in his career is he thought he arrived after his rookie season. He skipped all the offseason stuff. Oh, the only guy that skipped everything. And, you know, it's followed him ever since. And he's a little bit of a case of, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane. I mean, there's a lot of that to him. He looks great. He's athletic. But, you know, there's a lot of questions how much he loves football. But I don't know. I wish him well elsewhere because I think he's a good guy and all that stuff. And it's just it's unfortunate that it didn't work out. But they needed anybody that wasn't going to buy in, get him out of there.
We go on to the draft. They had three picks in the top 53. Obviously, the money pick that they made was Jaden Daniels out of LSU. You talked to me before the show about how you personally preferred Drake May, but do you have concerns about Daniels as a quarterback prospect and the impact he can have in year one?
Actually, I don't have a lot of the concern you and I talked about was the
staying healthy. It was more about the style of play and not the ability.
Yeah, and I think that's the unnecessary risk he takes by running sometimes. I'd like to see him dial that back a little bit as a passer. I mean, you watch him. I mean, he goes through his progressions. He's got a great arm. He doesn't have the best arm, but he's got a great arm. He's got a plenty good NFL arm. He's very accurate. There was a lot of talk that he doesn't throw across the middle enough. Well, that doesn't mean he can't do it. That the offense didn't call for a lot of that he played in college. So I don't really have any reservations. I hope they can keep him upright, because I know the last year they had some issues keeping, and they didn't really improve the tackle position. They didn't improve the interior, and you know, a lot of the pressure now comes from the interior. But we'll see how the tackles hold up. But I don't really have any reservations other than like we discussed, is just avoid the unnecessary risk.
Right. It would be – and my concern and my prediction for Daniels is that will be his undoing, much like – and sadly, there is a lot of parallels to – what was it, 2010, 2011 – was it? What was 20? What year was
2012?
It was 2012. So that 2012 year when RG3 goes second overall, looks fantastic.
Don't do this to us, Jay.
on the show with my regular co-host, that's the one thing. And I, as an Arizona State guy myself, Jaden Daniels is a guy I've rooted for. But in the NFL, it's hard not to see that happening again. You know, just 12 years later. And you know, I hope that doesn't happen, especially, you know, I root for Cliff Kingsbury. I root for Jordan Jaden Daniels. I don't necessarily root for the Commanders, but you want to see players do well and individuals that you know do well. You guys picked up Johnny Newton, which a guy that went much later than many believed, but it appears he's a little nicked up, that the foot, there's still an issue with, was it a foot injury? You know, Washington and impact interior defenders, there's a history of that, and Johnny Newton is absolutely fantastic. But has he been able to practice yet? I know that he had the injury that he was dealing with, and that after that, like rookie camp, that he was still nursing something.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing. When the rookie camp came, he was seen on the sidelines with in a boot, I believe, and it was the opposite foot.
Right.
So they asked Dan Quinn about it, and it was really weird because he played through last season with that fracture in his foot, and he had surgery, and he was a Big Ten Player of the Year. It tells you how good he was, and he had surgery in like January. Well, then as he was recovering in the spring, they noticed a similar thing in the other foot. Like, how weird is that you get the same injury? Well, I've read from everything that I've heard, he'll be ready for camp, or he'll definitely be ready for week one, but he should be ready sometime during camp. So there doesn't appear to be anything long term, and that would probably explain the drop, because everything we knew about him, he was going top 25.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any worries. And the good thing for him is he comes to a position that's stocked. Correct. They're not counting on him to deliver immediately.
That is, you know, as I mentioned, like the interior defenders in Washington, that's a thing. You got Daron Payne, even Jared Allen, and you got those guys that Jonathan
Payne. Yeah.
But yeah, and then you go Johnny Newton there, you pick up I know that he was well liked on the network on Touchdown Wire. Mike Sanders still cornerback out of Michigan, just because of how absolutely he's, you know, remember talking about Tyrann Mathieu being like the honey badger. This guy plays like a badger. He is fierce. He is physical. What do you like about him? And well, do you think he'll play this year?
Yeah, I think he's a week one starter in the slot. And I think he's a guy that by second or third year, he'll be a captain. There's so much to love about him. He turns the ball over. And this is a guy who hasn't played a lot of defensive back. He started out his college career as a wide receiver. Very competitive guy. He's not the biggest guy, but he's physical. He'll get in there and tackle. He's an immediate impact guy, I think. And if you ask me outside of Daniels, who'll make the biggest impact in 2024, I would say it'll be Sanders still, because he's just – when Nick Saban calls you the pound-for-pound the best player in the draft, that's pretty good praise.
Yeah. You go on to get Ben Sinnott, tight end out of Kansas State in round two. Round three, two picks. You've got Brandon Coleman out of TCU, Luke McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey's kid brother, wide receiver out of Rice, guy who could do a lot of things. Jordan McGee, linebacker, Temple, round five. Dominic Hampton, safety out of Washington, also in round five. And Javonte Jean-Baptiste, pass rusher from Notre Dame in round seven. Who of those picks after that? Is Sinnott, he's coming off an injury, isn't he? Or is that a different tight end that was coming up there?
He's healthy. Sinnott, he's healthy, yeah.
Okay. Who do you expect out after Sanders still to kind of make an impact in year one? Who has that potential?
I think Sinnott, Brandon Coleman, and Luke McCaffrey can all have an impact. And Brandon Coleman, the third-round pick out of TCU, the offensive tackle, he could have the most significant impact on the team outside of Daniels, because – right now they didn't add a left tackle in free agency he was the only tackle in the draft they added, and he was in the third round, but they loved him, and his workouts, like his wingspan and everything, his testing scores were off the charts. Some people saw him as a guard. Adam Peters absolutely sees him as a tackle. Okay. And there's a belief that he'll start early in the year at left tackle, and if somehow Adam Peters come out of this draft and found his left tackle in the third round, that's even bigger than some of the other picks he made.
Right.
I think he's making an impact. Luke McCaffrey's already doing things, and there's an opening there to come in as a third receiver. He's got a chance, and he can line up, like you mentioned, he can line up everywhere. And so I see all three of those guys making impact this year if they stay healthy.
Coming up next on the Risers here at Podcast, let's start Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and look to the 2024 season. What do they hope? What do they expect out of the Commanders this year? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Brian Manning from Commanders Wire. Looking ahead to 2024, that's not an easy schedule to start the year. I mean, opponents, whatever, but they start off first four games are on the road. They're in Tampa, they play the Giants, they're in Cincinnati, and they're in Arizona. That's a tough way to start. They do play in a competitive division where the Eagles and the Cowboys are always expected to be pretty good. Too good. And then you've got the Giants, which they look like, you know, it looks like that Washington should be able to potentially pass the Giants this year, because I think people see the Giants as a potential dumpster fire this year.
That sounds accurate. I think there's potential. You know, it's funny, this offseason, when Washington's the most stable of the four division teams, because it was always, you know, Washington was the one everybody laughed at. But going into this offseason, Washington's getting their stuff together. And you got the Eagles, who wanted to fire Nick Sirianni. I mean, it was clear they were trying to fire Nick Sirianni, and he had to hire new coordinators.
It's so wild that they're already trying to fire him a year after that they went to the Super Bowl.
Well, that's, you know, wild. That guy struck me as such a phony. And it was clear how important, obviously, you got one of them, those two coordinators were to his success.
Wanted us to believe that everything was the problem was Jonathan Gannon, and then their defense was so bad last year in the second half.
He went right into Indianapolis, turned their offense around with Gardner Minshew, quarterback. I mean, and he fell apart. Everything that Sirianni is just a cheerleader. If you ask me, he's just a cheerleader, and some of the stuff he does on the sideline annoys their Washington fans. Hate him. He come into their one year. He come into a press conference wearing a Mike Quick jersey, and he made a point to say Mike Quick used to burn Daryl Green, back in the day, and he didn't know nothing about the Eagles and Mike Quick play, but it was a burn to Darryl Green, who's arguably the most beloved player in Washington history. I mean, so yeah, people can't, Washington fans hate that guy and root for his downfall. Nobody feels sorry for him. And in Dallas, I mean, you talk about dumpster fire. I mean, what they didn't even try to improve in free agency. Then they've kept Mike McCarthy on a leash. Like, who knows what they're going to do with him?
And then they lost Quinn. So
people are going to say whatever about Quinn. The last memory is that Green Bay game, which, okay, fine. But welcome. Wait till you get Mike Zimmer. Good luck there. Good luck bringing him out of the retirement home. So I think Dallas is on the verge, and you got Dak going into a contract year. I mean, they should have handled that one way or the other. I don't know how. I know it's complicated. You don't want to pay a guy $60 million a year. That's kind of scary.
That's going to happen.
You got to take care. I mean, you can't let a good quarterback go. And he is a good, no matter what his shortfalls are, he's still a good quarterback. And then you got the Giants. The Giants are, you know, they're the Giants. I mean,
well, this is the year that Dable's going to be, that it's do or die for him. And unfortunately, they're still hitched to Daniel Jones.
Yeah. And his defense should be better because he's got, you know, Brian Burns is a big get for him, and that should help Thibodeau. I mean, that's a good duo there at the edge rusher. But, you know, you still got Daniel Jones. And, I part of me feels kind of sorry for Daniel Jones. But, I mean, it's funny because the only success Daniel Jones has ever had was against Ron Rivera. So Ron Rivera's not around anymore, so I'm not sure how much success Daniel – well, I should say Ron Rivera, I say Jack Del Rio is what I should really say. But, you know, Dan Quinn owned the Giants, so.
Yeah, it's going to be – so what are sort of expectations? Like, is a similar number of wins – while looking better, acceptable, or do you expect more wins?
I would expect 6 to 7 wins. And, okay. And you know, and I think Washington fans would – I'm not going to say anybody's going to be happy going 7-10 or 6-11, but when you consider where they were last year, I think everybody would be better. If, say, the defense went from 32nd to 17th, say Jaden Daniels looks the part, and they win 6-7 games, people are just going to be happy with that because they'll see a future. They'll see something
to build upon. I mean, that's the thing. Rookie quarterback on a retooled roster, you can't expect much more than that. Much more than that. I mean, the number of quarterbacks that have gotten on a team that was not expected to be good, and then they were good, I can think of Andrew Luck and C.J. Stroud.
And you know, everybody wants to use that C.J. Stroud comparison to watch.
You can't do that because
that's an anomaly. That's an anomaly.
Right. And well, and those were two very special seasons. And C.J. Stroud is like, in fairness, like, I don't think Jaden Daniels is on the same level of quarterback that C.J. Stroud was. Talent is incredible. But the difference in Stroud's ability to actually throw with anticipation, his impressive accuracy, he was a far more advanced passer than anyone. And I think what it came down to is that everyone, like, he played like a robot, and he showed that he can play off schedule, and the ability to play off schedule and still throw laser throws. He found, like, he's going to be a really – now he's got Stephon Diggs. Come on. Come on.
Yeah. Well, they improved the defense there. They're making a run for it now while he's on that rookie deal, and that's smart.
But it's now at 6-7 wins. What do you think is a best case scenario for them, though? Like, everything's going so the defense is middle, maybe above average, and Jaden Daniels is promising. What do you think is a best case scenario?
Best case scenario, and I'm going to name a few things here because as we know, it's the NFL and things can fall into place every year. The good thing is nobody, and I don't know if you followed the NFC, Andy, but nobody wins the division. Nobody, there's never a back-to-back winner. It's been like 20 some years. Like, somebody new wins the division every year, except the Giants. So, but you know, I'm not trying to kill the Giants. I don't hate.
There is honestly, I don't love the NFC East. I I am old enough to remember the Cardinals in the NFC East, and so there is not a team in that division that I wish well for, honestly. I never liked the Cowboys. I never liked the Eagles. Back in the Redskins days, there was a little bit of a connection because of the Joe Bugle hiring, but didn't like the Cowboys, didn't like the Eagles, was not a big fan of the Redskins. I definitely like the Giants. And so, you know, back, I'm old enough to remember the before 2002, 2001, when the Cardinals were the whipping boys of the NFC East. I don't care if that division ever does well.
No, I get it, because the Cardinals were the team that everybody said, well, there's our two wins. I mean, that's kind of how they viewed. I mean, because in the 80s and 90s, there was the Redskins and Giants, and in the mid 90s, the Cowboys took off, and the Redskins went in the toilet, and the Giants and why outside of those two Super Bowl teams, the Giants have been, they got really hot those two Super Bowl years, but outside of that, they've really struggled. But I think anybody would take those Super Bowl trophies where they got all the years of losing. If you could have those two Super Bowls, it's kind of worth it. But no, but the best case scenario is all three teams have issues. The Cowboys, the Zimmer thing blows up. Jerry's mad. Everything just falls apart in Dallas. The Sirianni, his new hires fail. And Jalen, I think there's a lot of questions about Jalen Hurts. There are serious questions about Jalen Hurts, and I think those are legitimate questions. Because if the tush push is so much of his success, I mean, that's just the honest truth. But how will it be without Jason Kelce? That's an underrated loss for Philadelphia, yep. By the way.
Yes, I believe that completely. I think, the fact that no other team has the same number of success is the fact that they had arguably the best center in the game. And, of course, Jalen Hurts and his incredible lower body strength.
And he, he is a lower body strength. He's an excellent athlete. And he's an easy guy to root for as far as a good guy and everything. And he earned it. But best case scenario, outside of those three teams, they have issues. But guys like Emmanuel Forbes progresses forward, best case scenario. Brandon Coleman, the third-round pick left tackle, he's an answer at left tackle. Jaden Daniels has a rookie of the year type year, which he's capable of doing. I'm not going to sit there and say it's going to be a CJ Stroud year, but he could have a rookie of the year campaign. If each of those things happen, you never know. I'm not saying Super Bowl. I'm just saying this division is so weird.
Right. I could see them in a bad division, things going well, hitting 9 or 10 wins. And those Ron Rivera division wins?
Right.
Yeah, I could see that, winning 9, maybe 10 wins, and in a division that kind of falls apart, and them being but that would be an overachieving year, like Dable's first year with the Giants when they made the playoffs. Yeah. It would feel like an overachieve type thing. I don't think that they would win a playoff game, but I think in a best case scenario, they could sneak into the playoffs and, get that and get whipped in the first round.
You said best case scenario, those things could happen, best case scenario. But, a best case scenario, a lot of good things would have to happen. It's obviously not. We've seen it. We see it happen every year. But I wouldn't predict it. I would still sit there and say seven, maybe eight wins is the ceiling of this team right now. But I think you're looking at 6 to 8 win range what's going to happen.
Honestly, that this team will have more wins. Well, and even if the Cardinals had two consecutive 4-win years, but last year's 4 wins looked vastly different than the 4 wins that they had in 2022, and depending on how things go, I could see that happening. But, yeah, that seems reasonable because last year was a dumpster fire. Now you've got, the players that they added are reliable. They're not stars, but you added a bunch of players that should bring up that floor at least.
Yeah,
and then you've got the potential of Jaden Daniels, and you still got Terry McLaurin. You've still got James Robinson there. In the offense, or Brian Robinson. Who's James Robinson? I don't know who James Robinson is.
He's a running back he was the running back for the Jags.
That's right, Brian Robinson. I've been around football way too long, man. And how do you view that game against the Cardinals? Obviously, it's It's the final of their 3 out of 4 road games in the first 4 weeks. Three road games in the first 4 weeks. How do the Redskins? Now I'm dating myself again. The Commanders look at that matchup. Is that a, as the Cardinals seem to be ascending and the Commanders are should be better, is that a game that is you view as an even opponent that you should be ahead of, or that maybe the Cardinals are a little bit ahead?
I truly view it as probably two even teams, but the Cardinals having the home field advantage and Washington traveling west. That's Washington's most, you know, that's the worst road trip they've got all year. Once they get over that week 4 game, it's their road trips are much easier. But I think it's you see two teams there. Maybe the Cardinals might be a little bit ahead as far as where they're going, as far as their development. But I think they're pretty well matched, evenly matched. And I would say if you told me right now to put a wager on who I think would win, I would give the Cardinals a slight edge.
That's one of the games that I have penciled in for them as a win, not because I think they'll be the Commanders will be terrible. I just don't they'll be quite there yet. And it's early in the season. Jaden Daniels, you know, it's different than what Kyler, because Cliff Kingsbury basically put Oklahoma's offense in place for the Cardinals that rookie year, so Kyler didn't have to adjust much to what he was doing. And unless Cliff is kind of stealing the LSU offense to include that in his stuff, Jaden Daniels will have a slightly larger learning curve early, offensively at least, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. Awesome. That will then clear up and end this edition of the Rise Up Syria podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk. We've been talking to Brian Manning. You can find his work at the Commander's Wire over there. And you can find him on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X. It's Twitter. Brian D. Manning as well. And you not only do you do content about Washington, you get some college stuff in, don't you, as well?
Yeah, I cover the Virginia Tech Hokies for Gobbler Country over at SB Nation.
And so, yeah, if you want to get more from Brian, you can hit him up on Twitter. You can find his work on Commander's Wire. We'll see if we can connect again before that game in Week 4. Brian, thanks so much for your time. That'll wrap up this edition of the show. We'll be back again soon with more opponent previews for the Cardinals in 2024. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.